Hello, and welcome to Literary Loitering, the Geek Show's dedicated book podcast. I'm Graham.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Andrew. So we are part of the Geek Show Podcast Network. You can find us online at thegeekshow.co.uk, where you can find this show and a whole bunch of other shows, like Cinema Eclectica, What Graham Does, and Four Panel, What Me and Rob Does.
Yes. Because nepotism is not a thing here, nor is self-promotion.
Nope, don't even know the meaning of the word. Unlike tumescent, which I definitely didn't have to Google to learn the meaning of.
Yes.
Anyway, if you like what you hear, you can help us out by clicking the donate link on the right-hand side of the website. Or you can visit the Geek Shop, where we have lots of lovely items that you can buy. And if you want to get in touch, you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk, or info@thegeekshow.co.uk. Or find us on Twitter and Facebook.
Yes, so I think it's time to launch straight into the news because...
Yeah, let's power into it.
Yeah, we have something special later on. So what's up?
Oh, we do.
Yes.
I completely
it's
forgot
so
we should...
It's so special you've completely forgotten this, isn't it?
Yes.
It's one of those super secret things that's a secret even to myself.
Yes, it will be a tumescent pleasure.
Yes, our word of the day calendar is paying its way already.
Yes.
So, yes, in terms of news, what have we got?
I have sex.
Oh, that's good.
Oh. Thanks for sharing.
No. I have bad sex and good sex.
Right? The full gamut.
Yes. Well, you remember Morrissey won the Bad Sex in Fiction Award?
Of course.
For List of the Lost. And I remember Andrew did his very dry delivery of particular passages. From that book.
Roller coaster of sexual violence.
Yes.
And his bulbous salutations.
Yes. I wanted to call a show that, but I wasn't allowed. I was told off.
Because it gave people PTSD flashbacks.
Yeah. Well, they kind of...
Stop it, Graham. You weren't there, man. You don't know.
The problem with the Bad Sex in Fiction Award is that Morrissey... now technically is an award-winning writer. But the Erotic Review, they want to protest about the Bad Sex in Fiction Award. What they're scared about is that it'll dissuade authors from writing about sex in fiction. So they are starting up the Good Sex in Fiction Award. You know,
okay.
According to Lisa Moylett, one of the publishers, we've laughed enough. We are throwing down the gauntlet. No more bad sex writing. That is not something we should be celebrating. I don't think they were celebrating it, Lisa.
I don't know. I was. My day was brightened when a new Bad Sex Award shortlist came out.
It's like the, you know, what was it, the odd book names?
Yes, the Diagram Prize.
Yeah, the Diagram Prize is always a fun one.
Yeah, Greek Rural Postman and their cancellation numbers.
Yes, that one always gets me.
Yes.
The problem here is that it's partly down to the compartmentalization of sex in mainstream literature, according to what the Erotic Review is saying anyway.
Mm.
You know, sex is part and parcel of life in film and TV. In novels, it is often refined to erotic fiction when it comes to books. So you end up with, you know, all those ones that are in kind of the adult section of the library that no one ever goes to, except, you know, the odd straight old man who's a bit lost.
Yes.
And I'm amazed that the library actually has an adult section.
Yeah, that's true.
Occasionally a vicar gets lost in there and we get a whole Father Ted type situation.
Yes. So Moylett is hoping that the prize is going to bridge the gap between the horrible world of porn and what we all chat about and enjoy.
In fairness, with me, that is mostly porn. But yeah, I get where you're coming from with this.
Well, I think it depends on what age you are, because when you talk about sex, it changes over the years. Because when you're a kid, you go, cooties. And then when you're a teenager, you're like, you know, well, I can't really say it, but it'll be like Roger Ramjet springs to mind. And then, I'm sorry, but that is a porn name, if ever there was one.
Yes.
And even I still remember the song to that cartoon, Roger Ramjet, he's our man, hero of a nation. Yeah. And then as you get older, the way you talk about sex with your peers changes.
Yeah.
And it also changes depending on your level of cultural awareness.
And sophistication.
Yeah, how you know.
And how many times you listen to Salt and Pepper.
Yes. Yes, who were vital in teaching me how to talk about sex, baby.
Yes, they taught me to talk about you and me.
I hope they get named the judges for this prize.
Yes, that would be amazing.
Actually, yeah, that'd be great.
I have the full list.
For anyone who manages to work in shoop as a dirty phrase.
I have a full list of Bad Sex Award winners in front of me.
Oh, go on then.
It's quality stuff. There's some big, big names here. Norman Mailer's final novel, The Castle in the Forest, won. Sebastian Faulks won for Charlotte Gray. John Updike fantastically won a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Here's something that's always kind of bothered me about the Bad Sex Award.
Yeah.
When you are giving it to a novel called Shire Hell by Rachel, sister of Boris Johnson, that is one thing.
And is that her full name?
That's a heck of a last name.
Yes, it's hyphenated. They're quite posh. Yeah, because one imagines that within the context of Shire Hell, I haven't read it, it sounds great. The sex is meant to be quite fruity and exciting. And if it is bad, that is a serious problem. The next year, it was won by the kindly ones, Jonathan Littell's novel, tracing the mental development of a Nazi commandant. Now, I suspect the sex in that book was meant to be a bit bad.
Okay.
You see what I'm getting at? Giving a bad sex award to a passage of writing where the sex is meant to be incredibly unpleasant.
Yeah.
Seems to me to be a bit of a fish in a barrel moment.
Yeah. Like, that does make sense.
I mean, the bad
sex... It's supposed to be more to do with the quality of the writing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I see where you mean. Yeah. So is the Good Sex Award then going to be solely for actually well-written sex, whether it be horrible or not?
Well, I don't know, because... I mean, I'm just imagining...
That could be problematic.
Mm.
I'm just imagining if, say, you know, Jane Austen did, like, a more hardcore version of, you know, Pride and Prejudice or something like that.
Yeah.
How would they speak? How would they describe it?
Yes, that's... for some people, that would be an incredibly exciting thought. For me, the idea of people who will not stop uttering those 200-word sentences, even in the throes of passion, is making me break out in hives.
Well, the other thing as well is, when you think about the whole idea of sex and pornography, it's changed a lot over the years.
Mm.
So if you take Victorian fiction, for example, you know, you might have a passage that that lovingly describes a woman's ankle, and, you know, that then would qualify for the, you know, for the Good or Bad Sex Award.
Yeah.
So a woman displaying ankle.
Yes.
What a harlot. Burned her at the stake immediately.
It's a strange thing, writing about sex. You do feel when you read some of the more, shall we say, underground Victorian novels, they are less shocking in some ways and more shocking in others.
Yeah.
There's just a different morality and a different set of values behind them. I should probably write for the Erotic Review, shouldn't I? I could do that. They had Brian Sewell writing for it once, so the bar can't be set that high.
What, the Erotic Review or Literary Review?
The Erotic Review, seriously.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, actually, that reminds me. Has George R. R. Martin won one of these yet?
He hasn't.
I'm surprised. Because one of his Game of Thrones books features Cersei and her Myrish swamp.
Oh, dear. Who's going to be the first to break that to Lena Headey? You were cast as a woman with a Myrish swamp.
I'm not sure how to follow that.
Fun phrase to pronounce, though, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I suppose I could do it if given a megaphone and about 30 minutes head start.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think we'll move on.
I think we should. So, I'll go next, shall I?
Okay.
So, I think it's time for enough clowning around.
Ooh.
Well, at least it is according to Stephen King, who has basically tweeted out about the whole killer clown craze that's going on at the minute. Oh my god, that was alliteration. I'm so good at this.
I didn't notice it at all.
It's an Easter egg for when you listen back to it.
Yes.
See, literally loitering. It's fun for everyone. So, Stephen King, he's tweeted, I mean, possibly the most un-Stephen King-y tweet I've ever read. Hey guys, time to cool the clown hysteria. Most of M are good. Cheer up the kiddies. Make people laugh.
Sorry. Is Stephen King...
That makes lovely balloons that float. Because, oh yes, Georgie, they float. When you're down here, you'll float too.
I've got to ask...
This is your fault, Stephen. You're the one who started all of this.
Yeah. Yes. Is Stephen King advocating men dressed in scary clown costumes chasing people down the street?
No, he's saying, you know, cool off about it, guys. Maybe, you know, chill out with the whole clown thing. Give it up.
Oh, so he's asking them to basically stop.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah. Right,
at
now.
The place, maybe not run after people with baseball bats.
Yes.
I have to say, given that there is a major new film adaptation of it in production, he is risking his future revenue streams with this statement.
I don't know.
He should not be arguing against the good publicity.
Mm.
Yeah, I used to get really confused by it, because, you know, the clown is called Pennywise.
Yeah.
Well, there's a company near where I live called Pennywise, and they fix washing machines and fridges and stuff like that.
Yes.
So, you know, I used to get really confused whenever my mum would say, you know, the washing machine's broken, you need to call Pennywise. And I'm going...
just open up the bit where the detergent goes into and find a tidy clown head.
Yes.
I was confused by the title of it, because it was always written as Stephen King's It, and you just think, well, Stephen King's what? So, yeah, this clown thing is getting a bit out of hand, isn't it?
Well, it started happening around here as well, around the Middlesbrough and Newcastle area.
Mm.
Which, oof, I kind of admire those clowns.
Yeah.
Really dress up and harass the people of Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's some rather large cojones.
You've got to imagine that if, like me, you live around Grove Hill, you've seen scarier things than clowns.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Where did we think it came from, it? This idea that clowns are inherently frightening?
No, I think that the idea that clowns are inherently frightening is an old thing.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's a lot older than it. I think it's one of those, you know, those weird genetic memories that we have.
Mm.
I think it's one of those. I think it throws back to, you know, the Fool, the Harlequin, stuff like that from hundreds of years ago. And yeah, I mean, that the whole Punch and Judy thing didn't help.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, also, fun fact of the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, you know Mr. Punch?
Yeah.
Did you know that the reason his nose is so large is because in the original Italian version, it was supposed to represent him having syphilis?
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
The more you know.
I was not aware of that.
How did it move from being a play about a man with syphilis battering his wife to being acceptable children's entertainment?
In the same way that in, what, 50 years?
I think the actual answer is it didn't.
Mm. Yeah.
I think in 50 years' time, 50 Shades of Grey might be on some kids' channel somewhere.
Oh, I hope so.
Well, surely in France it already is.
In France they gave the film a 12 certificate, you know.
Yeah, but then again, when the book came out in France, they took one look at it and go, what is this? We had the Marquis de Sade.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, back to the clowns. I've actually seen like whole psychological essays on why we're afraid of clowns.
Yeah, really? Fortean Times tried to dig into it. They found like urban legends from the 80s that sound very much like things that are actually happening now. You know, kids saying that there were clowns stalking the area. But where it comes from, I don't know, maybe it's an Uncanny Valley thing with the makeup.
Yeah, I've heard it's supposed to be like a... Because we use people's mouths to basically know how they're feeling. So if they're smiling, they're happy. If they're frowning, they're sad. Because the clown's just got a permanent smile painted on, that kind of throws us off.
Right, yeah.
Plus, I guess it probably has something to do with the idea of sort of accentuating features. So like having a bigger nose than normal, kind of like big hair, big shoes, that kind of part of that's unsettling to us.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I can understand the smiling all the time. It's one of the reasons.
Disproportional, that's the word.
Yeah. I can understand the smiling all the time. It's one of the main reasons I don't trust Furbies. That and the fact that they talk to each other.
Furbies are innocent. They just sit there.
And then talk to each other
in some
time.
Watching you while you sleep, and then you wake up, and suddenly they're closer.
Yeah.
They're closer. They're still staring, Rob. They're still staring.
And they talk to each other in some weird code. You know they're planning something.
Well, you may be right there. When Furbies first came around, I think it was the American military had to make it clear that they were banned from military bases because they could be used to record conversations.
Wow. Do you know, Terminator would have been a very different
Furbies
movie.
Furbies are working for the Reds.
Yeah, no. Terminator would have been a very different movie if it was Furbies.
They should give that a go. It can't be worse than the last one.
I don't know. I don't know. Has the last one actually killed the franchise?
They were talking about sequels before it opened, and they ain't talking about them now.
So it'd be like...
I hope it hasn't. I love the meta-ness of the Terminator coming out, and every time we think we've killed the franchise, it just keeps coming back.
Yes.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with.
And each time it comes back, it's more deformed and hideously distorted than the last time.
Yes. And it absolutely will not stop, ever.
Until we're all dead.
No, until you're a fan.
No, it's fine. We just need to, like, lower James Cameron in for a bit of molten steel or something.
Yes.
Should we have another news story?
Yes.
We should have a news story.
I have a good one. There is a new celebrity chef on the block. So yeah, watch out Nigella, watch out Jamie, watch out all the other ones that I can't be bothered to learn about because I don't cook.
Okay.
We've got a new cookbook coming out by Salvador Dali.
Sorry, what?
Yep, that's Salvador Dali.
The surrealist.
The one with the paintings and the mustache.
Yes.
That's the fella. He published his cookbook, Les Diners de Gala, in 1973. It features 136 recipes compiled by the painter and his wife, Gala. Chapter titles include Prime Lilliputian Malaises, which apparently is for meat dishes, and Deoxyribonucleic Atavism, which, of course, is vegetables. It includes recipes for 1,000-year-old eggs, conger eel of the rising sun and frog pasties, but fans of one particular vegetable will be disappointed. He has not included any recipes for what he describes as that detestable degrading vegetable called spinach, as I only like to eat what has a clear and intelligible form.
And that's why Salvador Dali wasn't strong to the finish.
Yes.
So yeah, we're going to be cooking along with Salvador Dali.
I'm not sure I'm ready for surrealist food.
I also find the prospect deeply scary.
I refuse to read it unless there's a recipe for a fully functional lobster telephone.
Yes.
My main concern with surrealist food is that Dali has somehow managed to turn existential dread into a flavouring.
I'm looking at his recipe for frog pasties, and it is giving me that feeling. I don't like the sound of this at all.
No, I do. It's for when you need to start your day with a spring in your step.
Oh, God.
Andrew mentioned the lobster telephone. There were, of course, a lot of food metaphors in Darley's work. I have a particular fondness for anthropomorphic bread.
And bread that looks like a man.
It's bread that has, God, how to describe this on an Apple family-friendly podcast? Bread that has a French loaf that has been manipulated to have something of the aspect of a gentleman.
Okay, so it's an anatomically correct French loaf, then.
Mm, yeah.
Because my next question was, if it's bread that's shaped...
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That is a very excited loaf of bread.
Where have you found this?
He also had a painting called Autumn Cannibalism, which I hope has absolutely nothing to do with this cookbook.
Yes. I'm not sure what to say
about that. That could help us with the cannibalism problem. The clown problem.
Yeah, I suppose so. Because, you know, it's getting that time of year when...
I mean, I guess as well it would help us with the cannibalism problem because it would then become socially acceptable.
And it would also, it depends on how we talk about problem, isn't it? It would solve the cannibalism problem in that it would be easier to do a bit of cannibalism.
It would, finally, equal rights for cannibals.
Yes, a gastronomic minority.
Okay.
We're just casually deciding that cannibalism is okay here, Rob.
I know, I'm not sure how to follow up.
Well, I think you'd better join in, because if people start saying cannibalism's okay... You either agree or you lunch.
I don't know. I think I'd prefer Soylent Green.
Just because it was prepared nicer.
Yeah.
That's the next cookbook sensation, isn't it?
Yes. Well, not only that, Soylent Green came in a range of tasty flavours as well. So, but, you know, long pig only tastes of long pig. So,
which is fine. Everyone likes bacon.
But all those artificial flavours in Soylent Green are going to be terrible for your health, Rob.
I imagine most humans would be pretty terrible for your health.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, it's a catch-22, isn't it?
Yes.
Because the ones that are going to taste the best are the athletes. Mm. But they're going to be able to run away quicker.
Yeah, the clowns would taste a bit funny.
Well, I don't know. The athletes, I don't think they'd be able to run away quicker. Because if you're talking about the 100-meter athletes, after 100 meters, then they're pretty much done. So you'd be able to... You'd be able to run them down. In fact, you could just jog behind them until they've run out of stamina after 100 meters, you know. The ones, you know, the long distance ones, the track runners, they'll just end up going around in circles. So you just go to the start line and wait there for them to come back round.
I like the idea that they can only run in circles as if they've like got one leg shorter than the other or something.
So, yeah, the ones that you need to worry about are the marathon runners, but there's not much meat on them anyway, so...
No, that's true. Mo Farah is more of like a light snack, isn't he?
Yeah.
Excellent.
How did we get onto this?
The Geek Show does not actually endorse the eating of Mo Farah.
It was all Salvador Dali's fault.
Exactly, yes. Blame him.
So, anyway, I've finally seen the bread, by the way.
It's very suggestive, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Have we got a final news story?
Yep, I've got one.
Okay.
Okay.
So, a bunch of speeches by that naughty old Adolf Hitler have been republished.
Oh, that scamp.
Yeah, that ragamuffin. But the key change being, they've now got a lovely new cover illustration.
Okay.
Of one Donald Trump, just with a big old hand up in the air and a nice salute.
Does he have a saucy little mustache?
Well, I mean, sort of. I mean, surely eventually that hairpiece is just kind of going to slip down in front of his face.
Or he could be balancing a slug.
It does look like there is, like... Something desperately clinging for purchase on there.
I mean, obviously, we don't really need an introduction as to why someone's done this.
Mm.
Yeah.
Although there is a little grace note to it. It has been done in response to the widely circulated story first told by his ex-wife Ivana that he has a collected book of Hitler's speeches by his bedside. Just in case, you know, he's stuck for inspiration, I guess.
Yeah.
And also, some stories I've read have actually compared Trump to Hitler and shown that the process to which they've campaigned is actually quite similar.
Yes.
Even the blurb sort of cites things like the repetition of name calling. I like the sentences, citing everything from reputation to name calling and a lack of logical justification for views held.
Although if we start calling people Hitler just because they're talking a load of gibberish, we're going to be very busy.
Yeah, there's a lot of people around here who kind of fit that mold.
Mm.
But I mean, I'm not so much disturbed about the, you know, the similarities in his campaign to Hitler's campaign. I'm more disturbed by something that came to light a while ago, Andrew, and I think you'll remember this. You remember the guy found parallels between Donald Trump and Caligula?
Oh, yeah.
So now we have the prospect of Donald Trump being the worst combination, or the best combination, depending on your viewpoint, because Trump does have his supporters, the worst or best combination of Caligula and Hitler.
Caligula-tler?
Hitligula.
That's fine. I would rather that, if God forbid Donald Trump won, I would rather that he appointed his horse to the Senate than appointed Rudy Giuliani to any government position whatsoever.
Did you say horse?
Did you not know that about Caligula?
No. I just heard wife.
Oh, that's a burn.
No, I know about Caligula's horse. Who doesn't know about Caligula's horse? Actually, it turned out to be a pretty good senator as well.
Yeah, but when we've made fun of Caligula's horse as a people, but, you know, we've never really checked out its voting record.
You know, once...
I mean, I would assume it was often against things.
Yes.
Since it would always vote nay.
That took me a second, but it was worth it.
Can you imagine stamp once for yes and two for no?
Oh, what's it done round the back there? That's a definite no.
This is what I think your idea. See what I mean? It would have been perfectly fine. It could have actually, can you imagine in the US Senate, it would be right at home.
Yeah, it would actually make more sense than Steve King.
Yes.
I've got to admit, I do have this sort of thing every 4 years where I become absolutely obsessed with American politics and can name everyone in the House of Representatives, and then I forget it all again.
I remember the last election with Obama, and was it John Romney. McCain last one, or was it... it was the other guy, the big dumb Labrador guy. What's his face?
Clifford?
It might have been Clifford. I don't know. I've got a picture of him in my mind. And, you know, it's the typical kind of dark hair, square jaw. Obviously uses too much Grecian 2000.
Does sound a bit like Romney, I've got to admit.
Mitt Romney, that's it.
Yeah.
So when at the start of this, when Graham said Mitt Romney, and you said no, the big Labrador-looking guy.
I missed the Mitt Romney bit. I didn't hear it.
All you knew was that I didn't say Labrador.
Yes, I was focused on the Labrador.
Wait, so does that mean we're marathon runners now, since we've just gone in a massive circle?
Yes. No. We're like 5,000 metres, 10,000 metres, that's what we are.
What a very odd conversation.
Yes. Where were we anyway? American politics, yeah, that was
yeah.
It. I love the carnival atmosphere they have. I just keep expecting people to just, you know, be wearing sequined bikinis and following around in some kind of pageantry.
Oh, if Trump gets in, they all will be.
Except they'll be doing it on the other side of a wall.
I just had a very, very horrible thought. If Trump gets in, is he going to try and make Hillary do that?
They'll all have to do it, man. Michelle Bachmann.
But Hillary will be the Princess Leia to his Jabba the Hutt.
Yes.
Yeah. I would like the bikini pageant thing to be enforced equally, of course. I do think that if President Trump forces Hillary Clinton to wear a spangly bikini, then, you know, Bernie Sanders should also be in one.
Well, I've just got this weird Star Wars thing going on in my head now. I'm just going through. Barack Obama would be good as Lando. Bernie Sanders is obviously Luke. I'm still trying to figure out who Han Solo is.
Bernie Sanders would be
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin is Han Solo.
Yes, because she's the renegade who doesn't play by the rules.
And we need someone particularly hairy for Chewbacca.
Yeah. Let me just have a second to rank American senators by hairiness.
No, there's a chart I don't think anyone thought they'd come up with.
Rick Perry could be a good Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, I see this.
Ooh, America, we do use their political system as a kind of circus, and yet our government is not good. Yeah. We should maybe ease off this.
Well, I find American politics is one of those strange things where they talk about democracy and they go, democracy, yay, democracy, we're democratic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're not. You know, and you just want to tousle their heads and go, oh, you rambunctious little rapscallions, you know, you and your mock democracy. You know, go play for a bit longer, it's fine.
Shall we have that as a way into the break?
Yes.
I like the idea of going into the break with Rob tussling the hair of America.
Well, you know, we are England. We're kind of the daddy to America, so we have to, you know, we have to let them scrape their knees and, you know, scrape their elbows and get into fights with other people, you know, get other kids.
Yeah.
They've got to learn to stand on their own 2 feet, after all.
We are.
The War of Revolution was just the teenage years of yelling, you can't tell me what to do, Dad.
Yeah, basically. It was the rebellious phase.
I mean, they're pretty bad, but we're the Killer Bob to their Windham Earl.
Yes, basically.
Yes, I am rewatching Twin Peaks in preparation for the new series.
All right, okay, we'll be back in a moment.
You know, I'm just going to put it out there before we go to break.
Oh, okay.
Watch some Twin Peaks. Wasn't that big a fan of it.
So that
wasn't the response I was expecting, but I'm glad it's the one I got.
And on that bombshell, we will take a break.
Do you like books but can't handle too many words? Or prefer comics? Then tune in to the Geek Show's dedicated comic book show, 4Panel.
Hi everyone, welcome back. It's time for something completely different. Normally we would be having books this week, but I don't think any of us have finished the books that we have.
Mm.
So...
I think all three of us didn't, under the assumption that it'll be fine because the other two people have books to do.
Yes, yeah, that happened.
I think that's exactly what happened, yes. So we have something different.
Yeah, we have a quiz because I've heard these quizzes go, well, you'd hate to say well, but interestingly on this show before.
Oh, yes.
And I have, ladies and gentlemen, a multiple choice quiz. The author on author insults quiz.
Ooh, this sounds good.
Yes.
Do you know what, as well? This is the first time I will be taking part in the quiz and not Quizmaster, so I'm excited by this.
Oh, good. What a one to jump in for. So, there's 10 questions. Each of them has 4 options. I, myself, have taken this quiz and got 5 out of 10, so that's the bar to get over.
Okay.
Doable, I think. In fact, I will get my high-tech scoring system, which is a pad and a bit of pen and that, and I will
just a bit of pen, not the whole pen.
I can't talk, and I will mark off what.
Don't you know, Rob? The value of the pound has dropped. We can't afford whole pens now.
This is true. Yes. This is true.
We have to share them out down the street. So question one, who said about Elizabeth Barrett Browning, she and her sex had better mind the kitchen and her children and perhaps the poor, except in such things as little novels, they only devote themselves to what men do much better, leaving that which men do worse or not at all? I've got to say the answer to this is not Donald Trump.
Although it does sound like it.
It does,
just
yes.
A very posh.
Well, I was going to say it sounded like him, but then it used too many fancy words.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't end with him saying, believe me, 10 times in a row.
Where is he, Naruto?
No. Oh, God, I've just had an image of Donald Trump doing sexy no jutsu.
It explains why he hates Obama so much. Obama must be like African-American Sasuke.
That's enough Naruto now.
Okay.
Back to, if anything, it's too much. It's too much Naruto.
Yes.
Yes. So that appallingly sexist quote about Elizabeth Barrett Browning, was it said by A, Gustave Flaubert, B, Bertrand Russell, C, Wilkie Collins, or D, Edward Fitzgerald?
Ooh, it's a tough one. I think I'm going to go with Wilkie Collins.
Okay. Andy, your answer?
I'm going to say Bertrand Russell because I've heard his name before.
Well, I've got to say, I would have been heartbroken if that was Bertrand Russell. I like Bertrand Russell very much. It was, in fact, Edward Fitzgerald.
Okay.
Both wrong, I'm afraid.
Oh, well.
I prefer to think of us as us both being equally right.
Question two. The quote is, if it were thought that anything I wrote was influenced by Robert Frost, I would take that particular work of mine, shred it, and flush it down the toilet, hoping not to clog the pipes. A more sententious holding forth old bore who expected every hero-worshipping adenoid little twerp of a student poet to hang on his every word I never saw. So who said that?
W.C. Fields.
That's a good guess, but it wasn't.
We haven't had the options yet, so...
No. A bold, though, I admire your bravery. Was it A, Ezra Pound, B, Cormac McCarthy, C, James Dickey, or D, Alexander Scott?
Well, I'm going to use the logic that helped me out before, by which I mean went horribly wrong, and say Cormac McCarthy. Because he's the one I've heard of before.
I'm going with Ezra Pound.
I thought it was Ezra Pound too.
Yeah, it sounds like something that would come from the mind of Ezra Pound. So,
yeah,
but I'm guessing that's wrong since you said I would have gone with that too.
Yeah, it was in fact James Dickey.
Really?
So that one I got wrong.
Can I just point out with that first question? Can Andrew and I have a point for not being familiar with a horrible misogynist?
That's a good point. Yes. Yeah.
Do we get honorary points for not being familiar with a horrible misogynist?
Yes. Yes. The coveted high road point.
Yes.
Yes. I think it's a great idea, which I will not be implementing.
Damn.
So we have the Marvel point.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is not as good as an actual point, but you've got it.
It does mean in casual conversation we can smugly trot it out.
Yes. So if we get like another moral point, can we then have a real point?
Maybe if it becomes this morally fraught, I will have different ratings for moral points and actual points.
Okay.
Kind of like when the socialist worker used to review films and they would have separate ratings for how politically righteous a film was and how good it was.
How did that work with something like 9.5 weeks?
I don't know. It would be fantastic to think that they were reviewing, you know, Basil the Great Mouse Detective through this system.
Yes.
Question three is a dialogue. It is two authors insulting each other.
Okay.
The first author says, he has never been known to use a word that might send a reader to the dictionary. The second author says, poor man, does he really think big emotions come from big words?
Oh, I've heard this one before.
Is that a back and forth between A, Vladimir Nabokov and Fyodor Dostoevsky,
ooh,
B, William Faulkner and Ernest Hemingway, C, Charles Baudelaire and Voltaire, or D, Robert Louis Stevenson and Walt Whitman?
Okay. It is definitely one of those four answers.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even get a moral point for that, to be honest.
What were the options again?
Vladimir Nabokov or Fyodor Dostoevsky, William Faulkner and Ernest Hemingway, Charles Baudelaire and Voltaire, or Robert Louis Stevenson and Walt Whitman?
My heart says D.
I'm going to go with C. Charles
also,
Baudelaire.
Help. When my heart keeps yelling out the word D,
yeah.
I think this is something terrible.
Charles Baudelaire and Voltaire.
Okay. Well, I've got to say, this is one that I got right.
Was it Nabokov and Dostoevsky?
You've had two guesses and you've managed to get it wrong twice.
Damn it.
Was it B?
Yes.
It was Faulkner and Hemingway, yes.
Yay, I got it right.
Did you?
You said D.
Yeah, but then I said B through process of elimination. So
this is great. We've not got any points so far.
But we have the moral point.
We have the moral point, yeah, which is more important. Question four. Who said, I often want to criticise Jane Austen, but her books madden me so that I can't conceal my frenzy from the reader, and therefore I have to stop every time I begin. Every time I read Pride and Prejudice, I want to dig her up and hit her over the skull with her own shin bone. What's that? A. Ralph Waldo Emerson, B. Lord Byron, C. Mark Twain, or D. Oscar Wilde?
I'm going to go with Wilde.
I'm going to go with Byron.
Both good guesses. I went with Twain, and we're all wrong.
Really?
Yay!
That is Ralph Waldo Emerson, believe it or not. I thought it really sounds like Twain, but...
I thought it was one of the other three.
Well, it sounds like Wilde as well, you know. It's the kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's the kind of really, really angry cutting thing that he'd say.
I mean, I wish I'd said it, and I feel there's a point in that, but the quizzing system has not recorded it.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, all this quiz is pointing out is the horrific failings in the quiz system itself.
But we still have the moral point.
Are you claiming that the system's the real villain, man?
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to fight the system from now on.
Okay, question five. About which book did Dorothy Parker say, this is not a novel to be tossed aside lightly. It should be thrown with great force. Was that A, Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, B, Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand, C, 1984 by George Orwell, or D, The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger?
Please let it be Atlas Shrugged.
Andy?
See, part of me wants to say Atlas Shrugged, but I'm very aware that for four or five of these questions, I've said option B. So I'm going to say Brave New World instead.
What this means, the upshot of this situation, is that this quiz's first point has just... been awarded to Rob.
Yes!
It was indeed Atlas Shrugged. The crucial giveaway is that it's the only novel in there which is awful.
But sometimes people have bad taste.
Yeah, but not Dorothy Parker.
I want a point anyway.
For being counterintuitive.
Yes. Surely, in a world of creative types... that kind of outside-the-box thinking is what we need to be rewarding.
That's the kind of awful contrarian thinking that leads to you getting published by Spiked Online, and I won't reward it.
Yeah, but Rob was going with the flow, choosing what was right just because someone said it was right, and that was how Hitler won.
Question six. You can still equalise, Andy, by getting one right. Who said, there are two ways of disliking poetry. One way is to dislike it. The other is to read Alexander Pope. was that A, Truman Capote, B, Mark Twain, C, Oscar Wilde, or D, William Faulkner?
I'm going to say Wilde.
I'm going to say Faulkner.
That's like a wildy thing.
I'm going to say Faulkner.
Okay. And he's just equalised.
Ah!
Yeah!
It was indeed Oscar Wilde.
That was definitely worth compromising my contrarian principles.
Yes. Your contrarian principles that you developed one question ago.
Yes. He develops these things really quickly.
Well, it's again, in this world of creativity, you can't get bogged down by just one way of thinking. You gotta expand your mind, guys. You want to throw out the old and place it with the new.
Yes, that's what we're all about. So, speaking of the new, let's do a question about 19th century literature. Who did Gustave Flaubert call a great cow full of ink? Was it A, Elizabeth Bishop, B, George Sand, C, Emily Bronte, or D, Emily Dickinson?
Emily Dickinson.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm tempted to say Dickinson as well.
It was, in fact, George Sand.
Damn it, the only male character.
But he's not a woman.
In fact, he was.
I assume.
George Sand was a male pseudonym of a female author.
Was it Georgina Sand?
It was not Georgina Sand. The pseudonym was, if anything, even more cunning than that.
Okay.
George Sand was, in fact, Amantine Lucille Aurora Dupin.
What?
So, yeah, I think you can easily see why she chose a shorter name.
Yes. Then again, if she was...
Saved on printing costs. Yeah. Smart lady.
Saved on printing costs. But if it was, if she was printing now, she'd keep her real name because she'd sell so much more.
Oh, yeah, she got paid by the word.
Yeah.
Question 8. About whom did Vladimir Nabokov say, "I cannot abide his souvenir shop style and bottled ships and shell necklaces of romanticist cliches"? Was it A?
H.P. Lovecraft.
Clive Cussler.
Is there any point in me coming up with answers? These are much better. Is it?
No, I think you should just give us both a point and move on.
Yeah, you'd like that. You'd like that. I see your game. Your game of trying to win. Was it A, Joseph Conrad, B, Lord Byron, C, Leo Tolstoy, or D, John Keats?
He let me down before, but...
I was going to say...
Like the Harley Quinn of the literary world, I'm running back to Lord Byron.
Okay. I was about to say Byron as well.
It was, bizarrely, in my opinion, Joseph Conrad.
What?
Okay. Yeah, but apparently Heart of Darkness was a really sort of fragrant, kind of kitschy little romantic novel in Nabokov's world. Old Vlad.
I've never understood that whole...
I shouldn't have bothered yelling out H.P. Lovecraft, because clearly the real answer is more ridiculous than anything I could have come up with.
Yeah. I've never understood that whole, you know, the whole use of fragrant when describing a literary work.
Mm. I suppose if it's a scratch-and-sniff novel, you've got a point there, but otherwise...
Yeah. It has fragrant prose. I'm like, what?
I mean, maybe that's it. Maybe someone dropped his copy of Heart of Darkness in the toilet before they gave it to him. That's why he didn't like it.
It has a musky scent.
Yes. I often found the secret agent smells strangely of Parma violets. So question 9. Our long national nightmare is nearly over.
Yes, it's such a high-scoring quiz.
Who called George Bernard Shaw an idiot child screaming in a hospital? Was that A, Rudyard Kipling, B, Virginia Woolf, C, H.G. Wells, or D, T.S. Eliot?
Virginia Woolf.
Yeah, I want to say Virginia Woolf. She was a mean lady.
Yes.
It sounds so wolfish, doesn't it? And in fact, I answered Virginia Woolf. And yet... H.G. Wells.
Really?
Yeah.
But what if you let me finish? I want to say Virginia Woolf. What are you going to say? Is T.S. Eliot.
Not even a moral point.
No.
Question 10, then. Our big finale.
That's everything to play for.
Unless you both get it right or both get it wrong, in which case there's nothing to play for.
The chances of us both getting it wrong.
Of those three scenarios, I think I know which is the most likely.
So, who once said this about The Catcher in the Rye? I hated it. It took me days to go through it, gingerly, a page at a time, and blushing with embarrassment for him every ridiculous sentence of the way. How can they let him do it?
John Lennon.
Mel Gibson.
Andy's answer is brilliant, but it wasn't John Lennon.
Mel Gibson.
It was, no, he said that about the Torah. was it A. Elizabeth Bishop, B. Zadie Smith, C. Zora Neale Hurston, or D. Adrienne Rich?
I'm going to go with whoever the A one was.
I'm going to go with the double-barreled surname of C.
Zora Neale Hurston, that was who I answered as well. It was, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Elizabeth Bishop, which means Andrew is right and he wins.
Well done. He's happy now because he's won.
I'm the winner. Rob comes in second and the listeners are the real losers.
Amazing achievement, taking it right to the last minute there.
Thank you. Just as I planned from the very beginning.
It was like the 66 World Cup final.
Yeah.
Only with possibly slightly less guesswork.
And far fewer pitch invasions.
Yes.
Or was it my wrist swamp invasions?
Oh, dear.
Well, that was fun.
Yes.
That was fun.
I'm not sure how to follow that, but we're pretty much at the end of the show anyway.
That's fine.
So we're going to leave you for another week. We'll be back next week with some actual books this time.
Actual. Yeah, book reviews, it's fine. We're going to get on to it.
Yes.
I make no promises.
We shall knuckle down. We'll get some books out. And we shall see you all next week.
Thanks for listening.